Jonathan Kraft joins us. Jonathan, long time no talk. How are you?
How you doing, Dino?
Doing very well. Are you? Good?
Pretty good.
Hey, is there a different buzz in the building when a significant game like this game is on the horizon, a marquee matchup, Brady versus Manning, Welker versus Amendola? Does it feel different in the facility on a week like this?
Upstairs, where the business people are, mm-hmm. and the marketing people and everybody like that, I think the answer is yes. I think where the football folks work, no. I think it's the same thing week in and week out, which is why Bill is such an exceptional coach over such a long period of time. I think he understands it's a long season, and you got to keep your team emotionally in the same place each week. And each week is its own, contest. And if you give one more significance than another, then when you're in those weeks where it doesn't have that significance, I think guys think potentially they can turn the switch off. And I that's what really makes Bill exceptional. So if you were to walk downstairs this week and walk through the building, I don't think you would sense any difference between this game and any other game in the regular season. But on the business side, I think clearly.
Jonathan, you still consider yourself a fan, right? You're up there. We see you. You're a Patriots fan first and foremost, correct?
Huge fan.
How did the Patriots fan and you handle saying goodbye to Wes Welker, one of the all-time great Patriots, the toughest guy, a fan favorite? Did you have to say to Bill, explain this to me? I need to understand why we're letting this guy go.
I'll answer the second part first. No. But on the first part, as a fan, absolutely. How do you not, as a football fan, forget just being a Patriot fan, how do you not have huge admiration for Wes? The thing I always say about him, aside from the fact he's a wonderful guy that I've had the privilege of knowing, when I stand next to him, and I'm no physical specimen, there's really not a lot of difference in terms of what you look at when the two of us are standing next to each other. And then you watch him step on a football field and do what he does. It's indescribable. And if you love the game and you appreciate what the game is, and then you look at him and you look at what he was given in terms of just physical, just the basic physical attributes, and then you watch what he does, you have to be in awe of him. And I am in awe of him, and unfortunately I watch him in a different color uniform, and I'm still in awe of him and what he does on the football field. It's exceptional and amazing.
Do you understand why he's not a Patriot anymore?
I do.
Can you enlighten us a little? Because I still have trouble grasping it. I still have trouble believing you let that guy. It wasn't like he was looking for a Jacoby Ellsbury contract. A 2 year. He signs with Denver.
I don't know what Jacoby's looking for.
About let's see, I'd say about 10, 15 times what Wes Welker got from Denver.
Well, first, Jerry, you just said he got a 1 year contract in Denver, not a 2 year contract. It's a 1 year contract with a club option for a second year. So I think that's a misperception that's out there. He got a 1 year deal in Denver, and then the club has an option to pick up the second year. It's not a 2 year deal.
We've talked about it in different TV shows, radios. We've read it that there's personal dislike between Belichick and Welker. That may have played a factor. Is that your understanding in any way when that went down?
It is. And Kirk, it's nice to meet you. I'm not sure we've ever had the privilege of talking or meeting. So nice to meet you.
You too.
I don't believe that's the case. I've seen no sign of that from Bill, and much like the way I answered the question about Bill and how it is down in the football area this week, Bill, when he's building a team, leaves emotion out of it completely. He truly does what he feels is in the best interest of the team. And he has a dollar value in mind and structures that can work for different people. And regardless of how he feels about you personally, not as a football player, because I know as a football player he has the utmost respect for Wes. huge amount of respect, not just for the physical toughness that he has, but Wes gets the game of football. He's incredibly intelligent, and you know, you saw him walk in here in 2007 and instantly get our offense and be on the same wavelength with Tommy. And I think Bill values those things highly, and I've never heard Bill say a bad word about Wes. And even if he did have emotions about him as a person, and I have no reason to believe that he does, that are the way Jerry and you were describing, I don't believe he would let that impact a decision that was good for the football team.
John, is there a tightrope to be towed here by the head coach when he is trying to send a message yet trying to put the best players on the field to win that game at a particular moment? I use as two examples, Ridley fumbles, he sits him down, and I get that. You know, coaches, you know, for many, many years have sent the message to a guy who puts the ball on the ground. But at what point does sitting a Ridley, as an example, hypothetical, hurt the team when you could be using him in the second and third quarter to sustain some drives? Another example would be, and we're going back to Wes Welker again, Wes Welker makes some foot comments about Rex Ryan, and I understand it was only a series, but he sets down Wes Welker for a series or two at the beginning of that game. At what point does that line get towed where you're hurting the team while sending a message?
Well, that's all Bill's area. I look, as a fan, I have opinions related to all that stuff, mm-hmm. but it's strictly as a fan. Managing 53 young guys, and it's managing 53 young guys through the rigors of a football season from June through whenever your season ends, and all of the messages and the methods to how you are trying to do things to achieve your ultimate goal. You got to have confidence in your head coach, and you have to let him do what he thinks is right. And Bill has the ability to do that. As a fan, you can sit back and question anything. I mean, that's why football is so much. That's why all of sports are fun to watch, but I don't think anything is more fun to watch and follow than football. Because there's so much to discuss. There are more players. There are more situations. Each play is scripted. You have those discussions, and I understand the question, but I would never question Bill's ability to make the right decision. Is every decision he makes right? Obviously not. No one's perfect. But to sit back and question what he's doing isn't something that I do, isn't something that anyone up here does. His track record speaks for itself.
John, quietly.
And John, that doesn't mean that as a fan you don't sit there
right.
and say things, but you gotta. He knows what he's doing.
John, quietly and behind the scenes, you are looked at as a problem solver in the National Football League. And I'm wondering, does the devastating injury factor that dramatically, from week to week, quarter to quarter, changed the landscape in the National Football League, is that something that worries and concerns the power brokers in the National Football League, John?
It definitely is something that concerns, I think, everybody in the league, not just the power brokers, and I don't even know who all the power brokers are, but I think it's something that's the real deal. From a team perspective, you're dealing with what is a hard salary cap. I know people question that, but it's a legitimately hard salary cap. And when you give disproportionate amounts of cap to guys who you think are exceptional players, you want to see them on the field, both because you want to know that limited resource of cash that you spent is going to be productive during the year and help your team win, but also because you want to see the best talent on the field. If you're the players, you obviously have a huge vested interest in it for different reasons. And I think in this last collective bargaining agreement, one of the things that was critical to the players, because they believed it would help the health and safety, and we at the league had no reason to believe that it wouldn't. I think some coaches felt like the cutting back on the practicing and the hitting, those were the changes that we made, might affect their ability to put a team together, but nobody thought that it would potentially have the type of impact that it might have had. I mean, there are no scientific studies, but that it appears it might have had in terms of serious injuries. And I can tell you that at a league level, that's something that we're talking about. We're talking about with the Players Association and how to balance it out. And also the visibility that all of the health and safety initiatives have gotten, hopefully, ultimately, will lead to a game that provides that it's never going to be a safe game by its nature. It's a physical sport. It's an intense sport. But I think within the construct of the rules, we want to try to make it as safe as it can be, and hopefully allow the guys who are getting paid a lot of money to be on the field as much as possible, because that's going to lead to the best competition.
Hey, John, can you dumb something down for us? We often hear Brady helped the team by taking less money or redid his contract, and Manning never does that, and you know Rodgers doesn't do that. Brady's more team-oriented in that regard. Is that true? Does it help a lot when Brady redoes his contract, say last year? Did it help a lot? Does it make a difference? Does it give you an edge over another team where the quarterback eats up more of the salary cap?
Tom is the ultimate team player from the standpoint that he is an exceptional talent who understands that in football you need all the parts around you for your best chance to win. And he's a very smart guy, and he understands the salary cap. And I think that if you look around the league, when you see disproportionate amounts of money in individual players and in a lot of respects quarterbacks, it's hard. It's not impossible. It's harder to achieve the construct of building out a complete team. And I think what Tom did with his contract last year was a selfless statement that's going to help the team and is also going to allow us to will allow us for Tommy, whenever he decides he's not going to play anymore, to end his career as a Patriot, which is something that's very important too. I think you've seen discussions these last weeks around Ben Roethlisberger, and I'm in no way saying Roethlisberger is at Tommy's level as a quarterback, because I just don't believe he is. I believe Tommy is as good as has ever played the game. I believe he's the best ever. But you're seeing a situation there now where the fact that he's going to have a huge cap number because of restructures that are coming out, and I think you're starting to see negotiating and posturing. I have no idea which side it's coming from. I just read the stories in the paper, and that's going to be a difficult issue. When you have a salary cap that's $130 million, and you have a single player under it with a cap charge that's potentially going to be $20 million, and you've got no way around it, I think it's very difficult, unless you do an exceptional job of drafting and signing rookie free agents, of putting a full team around you. So I think what Tom has done is very significant.
Does the off-field stuff with Gronkowski bother you at all, personally and organizationally? It seems like there's just, you know, we saw the thing a couple weeks ago, some other stuff. Does that bother you guys when you see this stuff?
The thing about Rob that I don't think gets talked about very much, I've told the story publicly a couple times, is what you see is his public persona in some of those instances gets an awful lot of attention. And obviously, you'd prefer he get the attention for what he does on the football field and how hard he works. And what I can tell you is the first and foremost thing we want with our players, assuming they're good, they're good people, is that they're passionate about football. And Rob is in here constantly working to be a better football player. When he's not in the building, clearly he isn't sitting at home on his couch all the time. He's out enjoying himself, but I can tell you he takes being a football player incredibly seriously. And I think I may have told the story on your air before, but I'll never forget after the Indy Super Bowl, he got operated on, you know, at the end of that week, like on Friday, I forget the dates. And then that Monday or Tuesday at about 6 at night, we were both walking into the building from different ends, and it was dark down in football where I was coming in. And there's a big figure coming down the hallway on a crutch, and this is 4 days after getting his ankle reconstructed and fixed. And he's walking in by himself on a crutch in the darkness a week after the season has ended. And I'm like, hey, Rob. He's like, hey, Jonathan. I'm like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm going to lift. No one else was in the building. I said, you're going to lift. I said, how are you going to do that? He could barely move. And he's like, oh, I was in here last night. I was lifting last night. I said, you all right? Are you able to go in there and do it? And he told me a story. He was doing skull crushers, and somebody had to explain to me what that was. But you're lying on a bench with dumbbells in each arm. And he said, yeah, I started to max out, and I realized I couldn't move, and no one was there to help me, so I had to duck my head and drop the weight behind me, otherwise it would have hit me. I mean, he's in there working. I mean, he loves football. And I think if we have guys on this team who love and are passionate about football, we're going to be a better team than teams that don't have that.
Hey, John, was there any communication with the league about the flag being picked up? And if so, what form did it take and what response were you given?
Those communications, Dino, would happen between Bill and the league. Mm-hmm. I was at a league meeting. I was sitting a seat away from the commissioner for a couple hours on Wednesday, I think. Wednesday. It was 2 days after the game. And you're tempted to say something, but that's really the type of thing that gets taken care of between coaches and Dean Blandino, the head of officiating. And I think there's a lot of communication that goes on after games and after situations like that where you get an understanding, a more detailed understanding of what happened, whether it was correct or not. And I think a lot of times the league office is actually, not a lot of times, they're always quite honest, and they don't, I'm not saying whether that call was right or wrong, but I am saying that in those communications, if they've made a mistake, they admit it. And if it was a gray area, they explain why it's gray. And if they didn't make a mistake and they were right, they tell you that too. And I think that's a real positive thing. I think it helps the head coaches understand what's happened better, and it also, because the refs get talked to too, I think it makes the referees better. And when you're clearly, I have my view of the quality of that call that night, and when you're viewing it as a fan and you're in that position, you're not happy. And we were sitting up there, we were at the far end of the field, the suite in Carolina where we were sitting, and we were pretty far away from it, but I had a feeling, given what the situation was, that he'd be looking for Gronk. And I watched Gronk the whole way, and I saw the contact. I didn't see when the ball left, and as soon as I saw the ref reach for his flag, right in my head, I'm going first and one from the goal. You're just like, yeah, and you think it's the right thing. And it's very frustrating when you don't get it. And I think for the answer about the direct communication with the league, you're going to have your afternoon guys, when they get Bill on, have them ask about it, because that's where that communication.
Oh, I'm sure he'll spill his guts about all of that, John. Final question. Does a February Super Bowl in New York, New Jersey scare the hell out of you? After all, what could possibly go wrong?
Not if we're in the game. If we're in the game, I love it. I think it's a huge competitive advantage. So hopefully we are. I think the Super Bowl has the idea of the Super Bowl in the world's biggest city, second greatest city after Boston. I think there's a lot of allure to that, and let's see what happens. I think it'll be interesting to see. I know for the people that like to play a lot of golf and go to the beach and go swimming as a part of their Super Bowl experience, it might not be like that. But I think with everything that's going to be going on in Manhattan and New Jersey, and literally like seven or eight blocks of Broadway are being closed down for an NFL experience type of thing, like a winter festival, much like they had in Indy, and Indy ended up being pretty cool. The difference is obviously Indy Stadium is indoors. But I think it's going to be an interesting thing to see. I hope we're in the game because I do think it's a competitive advantage. But afterwards, I'll be happy to come on and give you a post-mortem and tell you if I think it has a chance of ever getting another one.
Hey, a source tells me that about halfway down your April draft board as a future quarterback, there's an all-league named H. Kraft there that might get drafted at some point. So congratulations on that.
Hey, thank you. He plays on a wonderful team with a bunch of great players that that also had great seasons, two of whom made all New England, Max Gustafson and Nolan Brennan, and he has wonderful teammates, and thank you for saying that.
John Kraft, appreciate the time. Good talking to you.
Thanks,
we'll talk to you down the road.
Take care.